Well, and turn, if you will, over to the book of 3 John, and you may just want to mark your place there. We'll be using that as our text this morning. It's interesting how there are certain books of the Bible that we tend, if we're not careful, to overlook because they're not terribly long. 3 John fits into that category, yet it is an extremely rich book, though short in verses. It has a lot as far as application to us. We know that at this point, John is getting very old, and he refers to himself as the elder, I believe, because of his age at this point. And as he writes 1 John, 2 John, 3 John, he is imparting a great deal of wisdom on how we treat one another. And this morning, as we look at this, we're going to look at two different men who are kind of the main people in the book of 3 John. Two men who are going to get a great deal of attention. A man by the name of Gaius and a man by the name of Diotrephes. These men are about as opposite as one can get. And yet, as John writes this book, he's going to praise the good qualities of Gaius. He's going to talk about the negative aspects of Diotrephes. And this morning, as we look at these things, what I'd like for us to do is to consider ourselves. Who are we the most like? As we look at these two men, as we look at the things that John has to say about them, with whom can I identify? And I believe in doing that, we'll understand the role that we can play in a local church, whether that be a good or a bad role. So this morning, as we note this, let's look at these two men and consider their qualities. Note with me here in 3 John, beginning in verse 1. The elder to the beloved Gaius, whom I love in truth, beloved, I pray that all may go well with you and that you may be in good health as it goes well with your soul. For I rejoiced greatly when the brothers came and testified to your truth, as indeed you are walking in truth. I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth. Beloved, it is a faithful thing you do in all your efforts for these brothers, strangers as they are, who testified to your love before the church. You will do well to send them on their journey in a manner worthy of God. As we think about the man Gaius, John is going to point out three different things about Gaius that illustrates the quality of man that he is. First of all, he says about this man that he had an intense love for the truth. We'll come back to these in just a minute, but keep that in mind. Secondly, as he describes to us the qualities of Gaius, not only did he love the truth, John also says that he walked in the truth. And then finally, as John kind of gets to the point of his book here, he's going to say that Gaius supported those who were of the truth. Now, if you note, all three of these qualities center around the idea of truth. And that should not surprise us when we think about 1 John, 2 John, and 3 John. He says about this man that he has an intense love of truth. But as we think about that description, we understand that John, in these very short epistles, is going to mention the idea of truth at least 17 times. So here in the few chapters of 1 John, and then 2 John, 3 John, which are made up of only one, 17 different occasions, he's going to talk about that. Let me note with you a passage from 1 John. As we look at chapter 2 and verse 21, he says here, I write to you, not because you do not know the truth, but because you know it, and because no lie is of the truth. Now I want you to think about that idea for just a minute. As John here talks about truth, within this verse, he's giving us a definition of what truth is. It's that which has not been corrupted. It's that which has not allowed anything to come in and to take away from what God desires. And I think that's a very interesting point for us to consider as we think about Gaius. What John is saying is about this man is you have not allowed anything to corrupt your fidelity to the Lord. Can you think of a greater compliment that can be paid to someone than to say, when I look at your life, when I understand the things that I'm being told about you, I understand that you are uncorrupted in your walk toward the Lord. As we think about that quality in Gaius, I want us to think about our own selves. And I want us to think about our work together here within a local church. We understand that this kind of strength is going to make a local church a place that is going to be worthy of God. When we think about members who will take on the qualities of Gaius in saying, first of all, that there is an intense love of truth, a local church who has members of this caliber are going to present themselves worthy to the Lord. I think you and I both know how alarmingly easy it is for a church to get off track. It doesn't take long. It doesn't take much at all for a church that perhaps was going well to allow itself to become corrupted, to allow itself not to have this love for the truth. In fact, John himself is going to tell us about a number of these churches over in the book of Revelation. Let's look over just a page or two in your Bibles to Revelation chapter 2. Verse 1 begins a section in which John, through the Lord himself, of course, speaking these words, is going to tell us about the seven churches of Asia. We're not going to read all of this. But if you note in verse 1, he begins by writing to the church at Ephesus. And he talks about all of these good qualities. But look down to verse 4. He says, "But I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love you had at first." Or your translation may read, "You have abandoned your first love." We look on down to verse 15 of this chapter as he's talking to the church in Pergamum. And he says, "So also you have some who hold the teaching of the Nicolaitans." We continue on down to verse 20, the church at Thyatira. He says, "But I have this against you, that you tolerate that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophetess and is teaching and seducing my servants to practice sexual immorality and to eat food sacrificed to idols." We go to chapter 3, verse 1, to the church at Sardis. He's saying what? Look at the latter part of verse 1. "I know your works, that you have a reputation of being alive, but you are dead." And then verse 16, the church at Laodicea. He says, "So because you are lukewarm and neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth." Now what do all of these passages tell us? They tell us it is very easy to lose your way if you're not careful. That it's very easy to allow yourselves to go in ways that are going to pollute the truth. So as each one of us considers this, we need to consider ourselves in relationship to the truth. If someone were writing to us, if someone was writing a letter to us, could they begin by saying, "I am so happy to hear of your intense love for what is right"? When every member of a local congregation can have that said about them, that congregation is what the Lord desires. But not only that. John goes on to say, "Not only am I glad to hear of your intense love for the truth," he says, "I am also happy to hear that you walk in the truth." This particular phraseology is very typical of John. As John will talk about one's relationship to God, he oftentimes describes that as a walk. You are walking in the light. Or someone who is against God, you are walking in darkness. And here as John is talking about Gaius, he says, "I am very glad to hear that you are walking in the truth." What does that tell us about this man? Well, it's very easy to sedately learn the truth. You know, that's not a hard thing to do. You can sit down in your own living room and you can read your Bible and you can learn what the truth is. And I believe there's a lot of folks who've done that. A lot of folks who understand, they've got an academic understanding of what the truth is all about. But it is quite another thing to take that truth and to put it into practice. And that's exactly what John says that Gaius is doing. If you look back to 3 John, remember a couple of passages that he speaks on this regard. He says in verse 4, "I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth." And then in verse 6, talking about those who had been with Gaius, he says, "They testified of your love before the church." In other words, he's saying, not only have I heard about it from one group, there are those who don't know you that well, who on their first dealings with you, they came back and reported. So whether someone is a first-time acquaintance or whether they've known you for quite a while, they've come back and they have testified to your walk in what is right. Your reputation, he says, bespeaks the quality that is found within you. Your love of truth is found in the fact that you are practicing the righteousness that you profess. Well, again, as we think about this from our standpoint, the strength of a local church is going to be seen not simply in its knowledge. It's going to be seen in its walk. We think about that as individuals. We can think about that as congregations as well. As we consider Gaius, so we consider what someone would say about us. As they examine our lives, whether that person has known us for years or whether they're a new acquaintance to us, would they describe us as one who is taking this truth and putting it into practice? The question really boils down to, are we a hearer or are we a doer of the Word? As you think about yourself, how would you answer that question? As you think about your own reputation, how are others examining you? You're someone who knows the truth. You're someone who understands what God has said. But can others see that being put into practice within your life? Are we a doer or are we simply a hearer of the Word? Now take that to a congregational level. Can every member of this church be praised as Gaius was? You think about the members of this congregation. I don't know what the breakdown would be, but probably what? In the neighborhood of 150 who are baptized? We're not talking about children. We're talking about people who have committed themselves to the Lord. What if every member of this church was described as Gaius was described? Concerning our work in the Lord, there would be no stopping us, would there? There would be no way of saying we're not going to do what we know because every member has committed himself. Every member has committed herself to doing what's right, to practicing the truth. And what we understand is that we will be the kind of church the Lord wants us to be when that is the case. When we are taking that knowledge and we're putting that knowledge into practice. But you know, with the life of Gaius, John goes a step further. He not only says you have an intense love for the truth, and he not only says you are practicing the truth, he also says you are supporting those who are preaching the truth. Notice down in verse 5 once again. He says, "Beloved, it is a faithful thing you do in all your efforts for these brothers, strangers as they are, who testified to your love before the church. You will do well to send them on their journey in a manner worthy of God, for they have gone out for the sake of the name, accepting nothing from the Gentiles." Here were, I guess for lack of a better term, itinerant preachers. These were men who were not located in a particular congregation, it seems, but men who were going about preaching the gospel, not accepting money from those who most likely they were preaching to. And so what does John say about Gaius? He says, "You treated these men very well, though you didn't know them very well." Here were men who were not your companions, in the sense of having some kind of shared interest in earthly things. Here are men who weren't a member of the same congregation even. Here are men who you hardly knew, but because of their reputation and their desire to preach the truth, you made sure that they were supported. That's an amazing testimony. And as we consider that, we think about how that we, all of these centuries later, must have that same kind of attitude toward those who are preaching the gospel, toward those who are our fellow heirs out there trying to bring others to the Lord. As I think about these thoughts, I consider not only Gaius and those who he was helping. I also think about Paul and his relationship with the church at Philippi. I think we see something somewhat similar. Maybe while they knew Paul a little bit better, there is no doubt that they had the same kind of attitude toward him. Look with me, if you will, over to the book of Philippians, chapter 1. Philippians chapter 1. And as we look down to verses 6 and 7, notice what he says here about them. He says, "And I am sure of this, that he who began a good work in you will bring it to completion at the day of Jesus Christ. It is right for me to feel this way about you all, because I hold you in my heart, for you are all partakers with me of grace, both in my imprisonment and in the defense and confirmation of the gospel." Look on over to chapter 4. And as we look in chapter 4, going down to verse 17. As Frank read this morning, with our collection, note what he says here about them. He says, "Yet it was kind of you to share my trouble, and you Philippians yourselves know that in the beginning of the gospel, when I left Macedonia, no church entered into partnership with me in giving and receiving except you only. Even in Thessalonica, you sent me help for my needs once and again. Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that increases to your credit." Here were people who Paul says, "You were partners with me." These were people who didn't necessarily go out and preach the gospel. These were people who didn't join with Paul in one of his journeys. But these were people who were praying for him. These were people who were encouraging him. These were people who were financially supporting him. And just as we think about the Philippians, and just as we think about Gaius, we understand that there was one goal in mind, and that one goal was spreading truth to others. As we consider our walk, as we consider our role in spreading the gospel, we should give as generously as Gaius did. We should be the kind of people who, when we hear of a good work, we are willing to sacrifice our own wants. We're willing to sacrifice the things that we might like to have so that the gospel can be preached. What if all of us took the attitude that Gaius took? What if all of us took the attitude that we want to see the truth spread throughout the world? Consider how we would be in financially supporting those goals and in emotionally supporting those goals and encouraging those who are preaching. As Gaius was, so should we be. So we think about this man, and we think about the qualities that we see in him, all of them relating around this idea of truth. The intense love for truth, the walk in the truth, supporting the truth. And then we put them up against the second man that we find in 3 John. Here was a man by the name of Diotrephes. And while Gaius had an intense love for the truth, Diotrephes had an intense love for himself. And while we find Gaius walking in the truth, we find Diotrephes refusing to respect the authority of God. And while we find Gaius supporting those who walked in the truth, we find Diotrephes refusing fellowship with those very ones who Gaius was noted as helping. So as we consider this, we look at the second man of 3 John. And what do we find? We find a leader of contention. While one of these men was a rock, was a pillar of truth, there was another man who was trying to tear down all of these things. And as we consider Diotrephes, we understand that his love for himself was seen in his desires. Let's pick up here in 3 John, down in verse 9. He says, "I have written something to the church, But Diotrephes, who likes to put himself first, does not acknowledge our authority. So if I come, I will bring up what he is doing, talking wicked nonsense against us. And not content with that, he refuses to welcome the brothers and also stops those who want to and puts them out of the church. Beloved, do not imitate evil, but imitate good. Whoever does good is from God. Whoever does evil has not seen God. Diotrephes fell to a sin that has plagued mankind since the very creation. Diotrephes loved himself. And when one loves oneself, pride is always at the door. So here is a man who is committing the very sin that God has warned about ever since Adam and Eve were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, that of having a prideful heart. Consider a couple of things the Lord Himself had to say about this idea. Matthew 23, as He's talking about the Pharisees, beginning in verse 5, He says, "They all do their deeds to be seen by others, for they make their phylacteries broad and their fringes long, and they love the place of honor at feast and the best seats in the synagogues and the greetings in the marketplace and being called rabbi by others." You can see what their concern was. It was how they looked. It was about their reputation, about how they stood. We think as well, as the Lord speaks over in John chapter 12, verses 42 and 43. He says, "Nevertheless, many even of the authorities believed in Him. But for fear of the Pharisees, they do not confess it, so that they would not be put out of the synagogues. For they love the glory that comes from man more than the glory that comes from God." Unlike Gaius, Diotrephes had placed himself in prominence. He could not recognize God. He could not recognize the truth because he could not get around his own heart. And what you and I must understand is that as members of a local congregation, it will not only destroy our souls to have pride, it will destroy our work together if we have this kind of arrangement. Do you notice John's concern? He says, if I have the opportunity to visit, I'm going to bring these things up. He understands the leaven that's present there that must be removed. And so we understand that if pride is our motivation, we'll be stumbling blocks to others. So therefore, what do? We avoid the sins of Diotrephes at all cost. We put away these feelings that could lead not only to our downfall, but to problems for other Christians. We think about what Peter said when he says, "Likewise, you who are younger, be subject to the elders. Clothe yourselves, all of you, with humility toward one another. For God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble." That's what we must learn. We must not follow in that desire to have preeminence. Secondly, what we find about Diotrephes is that excessive pride that he had led to his disrespect for authority. Because he had allowed himself to become built up, because he had allowed himself to become the supposed expert, he was not allowing anyone else, at least he thought, to have influence in this group. If you note verse 9 of 3 John again, John says, "I have written something to the church, but Diotrephes, who likes to put himself first, does not acknowledge our authority." I think he's talking about apostolic authority there. Here is a man who has said, "No, I don't care if you are an apostle. I don't care if you walked with the Lord. I know better than you do." What we find is a man who felt in his heart and mind the need to outrank John. A man who felt like that if he accepted the authority of John, that some way, somehow, this meant that he could not be as good. Diotrephes had a problem because pride brings not only problems with brethren, but it also brings problems with God. Anytime we refuse to respect the authority of God, we are treading on very dangerous ground. We think in 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 6 this time, where Peter says, "Humble yourselves therefore under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time He may exalt you." You see, it's up to Him. Whether or not we're going to be exalted, it's up to Him. And the only way, God says, that you can be exalted is when you realize the humility that must be present in your life. Diotrephes did not realize that. And so we understand along with him that any time we reject something because we don't like it, pride has engulfed our hearts. If I can look in my Bible and I can see where God has told me to do something, and I say, "I just don't think I'll do it because I don't like it," what we have done is allowed pride to take over. And I ask you, how many prideful people went unpunished in the Bible? Those who were put up as examples. Was it King Saul? No, he was brought down. Was it Solomon in his last years? No, he was brought down. Was it Nebuchadnezzar? No, he was turned into an animal, wasn't he? Why are all of these things there? It's to show that if we allow pride within our heart, God will humble us. So it's not a question of will we be humble. It's a question of will we voluntarily submit in humility, or will God take action on us? John said Diotrephes has things to learn. He refuses to respect God's authority because of the pride within his own heart. And because of that pride, it kept him from sharing fellowship with those who were preaching the gospel, those who Gaius had supported, those who he had sent on their way, both emotionally and monetarily supported. Note what's said about Diotrephes in verse 10. John says, "When I come, I'll bring up all this wicked nonsense that he's talking." And not content with that, he refuses to welcome the brothers and also stops those who want to and puts them out of the church. In other words, those who were trying to do what's right, Diotrephes was seeking to stop. That's what jealousy can do. That's the kind of thing that jealousy will do to our lives. And what we must realize is how disruptful this will be in the work of God. I want you to consider another example from the book of Philippians. Going back to chapter 1, I want you to listen to what Paul says about some people who had similar difficulties. As we look down to verses 16 through 18, he's talking about people who are preaching besides him, two different groups. Verse 16, he says, "The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel." Verse 17, this other group, he says, "The former proclaim Christ out of rivalry, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment." In other words, he's talking about a group of people who were preaching in some way out of envy because they're out of jail and Paul's in prison. They had the heart of Diotrephes. But notice the heart of the Apostle Paul. Verse 18, "What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice." This morning in our Bible study, we were talking about the Lord's words about anger in Sermon on the Mount. And the idea of not having bitterness, of not having a retaliatory spirit. Here it is. This is what the Lord wants. He says when there are those who are trying to break the work of the Lord, "Hey, if Christ is being preached, I'm not going to take it personally." But what about those, such as here described, such as Diotrephes? What we find is that they are seeking for their own self-glory to stop the work of the Lord. And when one gets in that condition, pride has so engulfed and inflamed the heart that one's soul is in great danger. So what do we see? we see a man who, because of his own love for self, rejected the truth. So which man best illustrates me? As I look at these two men, one with an intense love for the truth, walking in truth, supporting those in truth, and one man who loved himself and rejected authority and rejected those who were trying to preach the gospel, which one do I align most closely with? Which one best describes me? And I would encourage all of us, if we see ourselves leaning more in the direction of Diotrephes, that we make a correction. That we make sure that we, like Gaius, are recognized by the Lord because of our love for Him. And if we'll do that, not only will we receive praise such as John gave to Gaius, much more importantly, we'll receive the praise from God. As we think about these thoughts this morning, where is your heart? Have you allowed pride to overcome? Have you allowed pride to rob you of the help that you can give others? Most importantly, have you allowed pride to keep you from submitting to God? This morning, if you're ready to come to Him, if you're ready to become the person that He wants you to be and that He will help you to become, submit to Him. Be buried in the waters of baptism, or if there's sin in your life and you'd like for us to pray with you about that, we'll do so. Whatever it takes this morning to be a Gaius, to be the kind of man in whom the Lord can be pleased, won't you come submit to the Lord as we stand and sing?